The old lady who lived in a shoe who had so many children she didn't know what to do clearly fucks. She has so many children that she just doesn't know what to do.
You're gonna watch a man within the hour die and then eat fish fingers and custard with a fucking child.
He's a grimy little man.
But now that house is dead, dead as hell.
Well, guess what? I hate you so much.
How would you kill Mother Goose?
Did reality start to slip away?
You should kill that person. Good evening to only those who know that at one point, Furbies were banned from the Pentagon.
Welcome to Genre Blind, a podcast where we break down the cliches that make pop culture positively slick and slippery.
Every episode, we use the random trope feature on TV Tropes to spark discussions about the media therein.
This is a swearing podcast. We both have degrees, and you're just going to have to trust us on this. His name is Diggs Brown.
And her name is Annalie Tominelli. And this is Genre Blind. Just a programming note, we're not here to hate on tropes. We're here to make you love them. Hello.
Hello. So how's your week been? Has it been good?
So I just got done a comedy intensive week and sleep experiment at the same time. So
wow, that must have been really trippy.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have a bad time. I really don't feel like a person, but I met a lot of like cool actors, so you know.
Sure. Yeah, but like, did reality start to slip away?
Oh, 100%.
Slide.
100%.
Like,
I got locked into doing a TikTok live stream for money, so you could say things got away from me.
That's good. That's good. I stress cut off all of my hair with a pair of kitchen scissors.
Are you stress dyeing it soon?
Well, okay. So here's the thing. I stress cut off all of my hair, and now I look a little bit like Cersei Lannister in the last season, where she has very short hair and a very angry face. That's me. Short hair,
I've never seen Game of Thrones.
Pity. Pink is also going to be a good time. Yes. I'm very excited for pink. Don't get me wrong.
Pink will be cool. Pink is going to look cool.
Oh, I absolutely think that pink is going to look good. But for right now, I'm kind of vibing looking like a boy band character, and I like lurking like Cersei Lurkisner.
Lurkister.
I lurker lurking like a Cersei Lurkermer.
You could tell me that that's a character, and I would not debate you on that. I simply
Cersei Lannister, have no... interestingly enough, she has this problem where her ears just, like, cascade down her shoulders, and that's the main central plot of Game of Thrones.
Right.
And then there are dragons, but it's mostly just kind of like a whose ears are longer.
Mm. Is that, that's how they decide who takes the throne, right?
Yeah.
Is based on ear length?
It is, and it's, and it does take place in Middle Earth Part 2.
Right, the Electric Boogaloo.
Middle Earth Part 2, Electric Boogaloo.
I had a question, is Ed Sheeran there?
Yeah, Ed Sheeran shows up. He is canonically a planeswalker, which is kind of fun for Ed Sheeran.
Mm. That's interesting for him.
Yeah, everybody.
Unlike that time he was human ketchup. And, you know, speaking of things that are only uncomfortable until you try them, we're gonna go to our first trope.
Oh, God. Oh, God. That's
this one.
Dread.
This one is sent in by a listener, actually. This one is sent in by Night Angel 000, who's actually a friend of the show. You should check out on Instagram their art. They make really cool watercolor pieces.
Hey.
They have painted me several times, so I'm not biased about their talent.
No, but I've seen their stuff too. They're actually wicked talented.
Oh, they're so good at it. It's gorgeous stuff. And they play around with mediums a lot too. It's a lot of fun.
We love a multi-hyphenate artist.
Multi-talented.
What's his name? Andy Warhol can eat my shorts.
Huff them up, boy. The first trope is there's only one bed.
There's only one bed.
So I have to confess that my first thought with this is that one Rhett and Link song from way back when. This is a nice hotel indeed. It's a nice hotel indeed. There's only one bed. There's only one bed. Call it right now. Call it tails or heads. Both. But we're not telling anyone.
Yeah. Yes. So this is where people are forced into a situation where there's only one bed and there might be
canoodling
or not. Like, for instance, in Willy Wonka, in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, all of the grandparents sleeping foot to foot in one giant bed.
Yeah, that's not.
Hey, keeping each other warm with their nice little feet. They just have bed sores.
I can't imagine having someone's feet that close to me forever.
Just imagine. But no, it's not just that. You're being sandwiched between two people's feet forever.
Yeah, there's more feet.
There's more feet. You're just in a... It's two sets of grandparents, sedentary in one big bed, foot to foot. What do you think they think about? What do you think they talk about late into the night?
I literally don't. I can't stand Charlie and the Chocolate Factory's fucking grandparents.
I can't stand beds.
He can just get up.
Of course
he can just get up.
Of course he can. And the fact that he doesn't means that he's a grimy little man. A grimy, yeah. Grimy little grandpa. Because here's the thing.
Yeah.
You pass 80% of your gas in bed. Your mm-hmm. mattress over the course of its use will probably increase by about 10 pounds worth of your secretions. So imagine four elderly people just ripping it under.
No, thank you. And you know they're not all sleeping at the same time.
No, of course not.
They're awake for it. Because you know
that Grandma Georgina just watches the others while they sleep.
Well, they have to have a night watchman. They have to take it in shifts.
Do you think they take it in shifts?
I think they must.
They're like, the demons can't come to take our souls away. We're very old, so we have to be on constant alert.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Grandma Georgina has the night shift. She's gonna watch for the devil.
The devil, the Grim Reaper, has come to try and visit them a few times, and all she does is waft their collective stink. That way.
She fans the duvet.
She fans the duvet. She fights off death on the reg.
Oh,
and that's why there are so many of them.
Speaking of fighting off death on the reg, I also, with this trope, always think about the Shakespeare episode of Doctor Who, when the Doctor and Martha share a bed, and he's like being real polite about space, and then he rolls over and he's like, I wish Rose were here.
Oh, my.
He just, like, actually says that, and Martha's like,
great, this is great.
Cool.
I remember that, because I loved Martha. She was such, like, a competent companion.
Good.
And listen, Rose was great. Rose was fine.
I am not going to have any Rose slander in this here podcast. I have, like, a special affinity for Rose.
Rose is
even
great.
She's not my fave, but she, I will
it's
not
because
hear
Donna
anything.
Noble is obvious.
It's because Donna Noble.
It's because Donna Noble. But no, Rose is great, and I loved Rose. But I loved Martha. She was just
cool
and competent. She's just like, oh man, I kind of have a crush on this doctor guy. And he's just like, my lover is in another dimension, and I'm sad all the time.
How scary would it be, though, if you were in love with a guy and he was like, yeah, I miss my ex-girlfriend. Oh, why'd you guys break up? Oh, she literally got sent to another dimension and there's nothing I can do about it.
God, that's a red flag right there. That is a red flag.
Like, that sucks.
Yeah, that sucks.
And my other partner is dead sometimes and has died in front of me so many times, and his name is the Master, and that's a little uncomfortable
Wait
to talk
second.
About.
Wait a second, I didn't know that that's what you... I'm just like, oh, which one of the Doctor's companions?
I think about constantly that the show Doctor Who created one of the most, like, intricate friends to enemies to friends to lovers, like, really complicated dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And then named those characters the Doctor and the Master and made it the dumbest thing imaginable. Like, it's such a beautiful relationship. Like, it's there's so much to it. It's just they're the two stupidest people alive and you can't say their names.
It's true. It does sound kind of silly. The thing is, you can't think about a lot of Doctor Who, or I guess maybe any sci-fi or fantasy, because if you're like, ah, orcs and Daleks, everybody's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's also, Doctor Who is like, we're gonna give you one of the hottest, most scalding takes on, like, humanity possible, but first you are gonna watch this man absorb the chick who played Moaning Myrtle, and you're gonna like it.
Yep. You're gonna like, wonder about mortality. You're going to think about, you know, the experience of time on a timeline of a mortal, but you're also going to listen to somebody say, moisturize me, as she's, as she's just a stretch piece of skin.
You are going to watch the literal heat death of Earth in a party atmosphere and watch someone come to terms with the fact that everyone from her species is dead in her, like, first space outing, and then you're going to listen to the song Toxic by Britney Spears.
Oh my god, I forgot that Toxic plays during that episode. So good!
Oh my god.
Yeah, you're gonna see people go to, you're going to see people go to, like, a fun, nice little space spa, and then you're going to wonder about mob mentality and, what is the episode called when he's almost tossed out into
midnight.
The
midnight. You are going to watch one of the most tragic death scenes in modern media as a man comes to terms with the fact that he does not want to die, but he has to in order to, like, save someone he cares about. And it's like, it's not even to save the world, it's just he cares about Wilf and he's willing to die for him. This prophecy's been leading up to it, and he dies. And not 20 minutes later, he's touching his ears, and because his hair is touching his ears, he's like, I'm a girl! I have legs! Yes. Sorry, I know the line is still got legs. It's just, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's all well and good. Yeah, Doctor Who.
You're gonna watch a man within the hour die and then eat fish fingers and custard with a fucking child.
Oh my god. Oh my god. It's all, it's very, very, very silly, but it's also very good.
Everyone get back into Doctor Who.
Yeah, god. Maybe I should get back into Doctor Who.
One of the better human inventions.
I fell off the wagon during Moffat era, and then I,
fuck Moffat. Get back into Chibnall. See some Jodie Whittaker. Get out.
Oh my god, Jodie Whittaker! Oh,
she's so good. Also,
I love Jodie Whittaker.
I'm sorry. No offense to John Sims a la Doctor Who, not a la Magnus Archives. The Master from the Chibnall seasons really just... Ooh.
Oh, yeah?
He is everything to me.
Oh, yeah?
His dynamic is so good, and their dynamic is so good, and also he's fucking so choice. I have never seen a more distinct, like, you know, like, in a piece of media where someone goes from, like, acting normal to, like, oh my god, I'm crazy now, and it's sometimes, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He fucking does it so nicely. It's, oh my god.
Yeah. British actors do that. It's because they trained in that Shakespeare.
He's, anyway.
Oh yeah.
Anyway.
But also, I mean, like, I feel like their relationship would be very complicated. Like how oftentimes presidents of the United States, who haven't been impeached twice, often can only really relate to other past presidents of the United States.
Yes.
Because you know that even though clearly they have their differences, like, Barack Obama and George W. Bush are just like, man, remember when we fucking ran the country? That was crazy,
right?
Yeah,
they're very close.
Yeah, but in the same way, like, imagine the Doctor and the Master being like, well, you know, time, am I right?
It's literally just us, and literally no one else will ever be able to, like, comprehend it on this same scale.
Yeah. So all in all,
oh, Doctor Who is so sad.
Master and Doctor for president.
No! We tried that.
Wait. What?
Vote Saxon?
Oh, you're so right. God, never mind. Just kidding. Literally just kidding.
This trope is me because I love sharing beds with people.
The trope is absolutely not me under any fucking circumstances.
We have shared a bed.
Yeah, I think we have shared a bed. And you know what?
That wasn't like a sleepover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like sleepover, other option, floor. This is no offense against people. I just think that people are generally gross. You're not
gross.
This
was also when you were a lot younger and I think hadn't thought as deeply as you do now about like the contents of beds.
Well, here's the thing. I do not like beds. I've always kind of been rather prickly. But definitely now.
A floor person?
Yes. Well, I mean, because I was the youngest child, I was the youngest, so I would always sit and exist on the floor. So I am the most comfortable existing and sitting on the floor and not being close to anybody. Mother, why didn't you love me more?
In sleepover context, I am also very fond of like L-shaped couches. So like you can still like be in the same space and like maybe your feet are close to each other and you can still like talk.
I've definitely done that at your house before.
Yeah, you've done that a few times at my house.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a good sleepover room.
Ugh, it was a good sleepover room. Probably a little bit
haunted.
But
now that house is dead. Dead as hell.
Dead as hell. What kind of shoes is it wearing?
Tim, speaking of the Doctor and the Master, we have another trope that was... Okay, so we had a suggestion for a trope from our business partner, Abigail Olshan, who runs the Between Stage and Screen podcast, which you should all listen to. She suggested we do the enemies to lovers trope.
Okay.
However,
and so,
hold on.
Yeah.
This trope doesn't exist, because like that's a fanfic trope, and it doesn't exist like purely as that on TV tropes, so the closest we really have to it right now is rivalry as courtship. Because there is, okay, so there's a trope called foyer, which is basically like, it's a larger umbrella term where like you ship enemies together, and there's like a bunch of different tropes that go into it, like rivalry as courtship, or like forced betrothal, or like, you know, like all sorts of different like why you would ship two enemies together. But there isn't just a strict enemies to lovers trope on TV tropes.
Interesting, because that is one of the most common dynamics that I have seen. You know, it's always friends to lovers or enemies to lovers. It's a very common trope, and it was set, I mean, clearly during Shakespearean time, but we already kind of covered that. But let's talk about Jane Austen for a second, because
could we please talk about Jane Austen for a second?
Hey, listen, there's a part of me that wants to talk about Jane Austen for a second. There's a part of me that knows the podcast will get R-rated if we talk about hands touching
Jane Austen
during a contredanse. Ugh. Stop.
Thinking about a woman running 3 miles, getting mud on the edge of her dress and the blush creeping into her cheeks as your fucking friend makes fun of her.
That's, it's so good. She's just like, hey, fuck Elizabeth Bennet. She sucks. Doesn't she look so fucking ratty? And then,
think the exercise.
Yes, exactly. The exercise has brightened her eyes. You know, okay, my favorite scene. So in Pride and Prejudice. Okay. So it has to do with Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth Bennet and Caroline Bingley.
Ooh.
So Caroline Bingley is like, so everybody's sitting around reading. Elizabeth sitting around reading. Darcy sitting around reading. Caroline can't fucking read. She's a fucking illiterate piece of shit.
Yeah.
And so she's like, Elizabeth, let's take a walk around the room. And Elizabeth's just like, fine, I guess fucking so, that's fine. And Caroline's just like, Mr. Darcy, won't you join us? And he's just like, no, because you're either in each other's confidence and I would be imposing, or you're aware that your figures look much better when you're walking around the room and my view's fine from here. Not a direct quote, but you know, the sentiment
literally
is there.
It wrecks me. I'm also obsessed with, like, he pulls out like the worst, bitchiest proposal, like the,
oh my god,
the, I have every reason in the world to think ill of you, no motive can excuse the unjust and ungenerous part you acted there, like,
yep,
that whole
yep,
bit,
yep, yep.
And then she rolls up to Darcy Manor. His sister is there, and she's like, oh my god, he told me so much about you.
I know. She's just like, oh my gosh, he was totally gassing you up, and he's just like, man, should I be super thrilled that you're fucking poor? And she's like, no, I guess not. He's just like, you're so poor. I like you a lot. And she's like, don't. Don't.
But I love and respect Elizabeth for being like, you're the last man in the world whom I could ever be prevailed to marry. And then she rolls up to his estate and is like, well, hold on.
Well, now hold on. That might be negotiating.
Take it back now, y'all. He has trees on his property and he is wealthy enough that he has not had to cut them down. I don't think you understand.
God.
This is a side note. There is a book.
Uh-huh.
Called Pride and Prometheus.
Uh-oh.
That is, of course, about one of the Bennett sisters. I believe it's Lydia Bennett falling in love with Victor Frankenstein.
Lydia Bennett falls in love with Victor Frankenstein?
Yes. No, it's not Lydia. No, it's Mary. It's Mary. Sorry, it's Mary Bennett.
That's
during, this is important. This is important, is the fact that it actually technically works. It's when he and Clerval go on that like tour in like England and Scotland, like when he's about to like build the bride. So like they're visiting England and
that's great.
And so
she's great because she's so sad.
Yeah.
She's so gloomy.
Yeah, she like meets him. She meets him at like some like ball that like Henry forces him to go to. And she says, like, she's, like, studying the sciences a little bit, like, in terms of, like, she really likes fossils and, like, looking for them on beaches. And so she mentions that, and Victor did not talk this entire time. Like, he's just, like, being really surly. And he's like, wait, fossils? And just, like, starts talking to her.
Wait, fossils? We gotta talk
about
fossils.
He's like, holy shit, this is incredible. And then Henry rolls up and is like, you got him to talk? What the fuck?
Oh my god. Oh my god. Thank God for Henry for being such a good
man. They also got it right because there's a bit where she's like, oh yeah, he had a French accent, but his English was really good. It's like, yeah, fuck yeah, he does.
Yeah.
He absolutely
wow,
is
surprise,
Swiss.
Victor's French.
He's half Swiss, he's mostly Swiss
half
and
Swiss.
Partially Italian, but he would speak French.
Victor Frankenstein would speak French canonically.
And would have a French accent.
But he would be able to speak English. Mm-hmm. He went to school in Ingolstadt.
Which is in Germany.
Wait, no, shit.
Which is
in
Germany.
So he would be able to speak German. So, okay, let's walk this through.
Okay, he can speak French,
Swiss.
And he can speak German.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Scotland.
He did go and visit to talk about the philosophers.
Yes.
Yeah. Because he's like, I admired the London philosophers. I needed to learn about people.
But that was also at Ingolstadt.
No. Wait.
He studies, like, the alchemy and the natural philosophers, like, in his family home, like, in the, like, library. And then when he goes to fucking college, they're like, lol, psych, alchemy's fake.
Oh, shit. I guess I got the timeline.
He interacts with, like, English professors, I think. It's during one of those bits that gets, like, shuffled between the versions.
Yeah.
That's, like...
And Henry Clerval is always, like, a golden retriever being like, look over here! Look at this! Look at the mountains! Look at the trees! Isn't life beautiful?
Yeah.
And he's just got this rain cloud of, like, I hate everything. I'm so sad all the time.
Yeah, it's truly something special. But yeah, he definitely
it's
at one
so
point talked, like, he can definitely speak English. We see him speak to, it's either a professor or, like, a translation or something. Like, he speaks English.
Yeah.
He also, he goes to Scotland. So he's gotta, because I don't know about you, but I feel like trying to interpret Scottish accents while you only speak French has got to be wild.
No, Scottish accents are rather bad for just like any kind of, they also have just like bouncy slang.
Yeah, there's a lot of slang, and if you're not like fluent in the language, like getting that slang is nearly impossible.
Oh yeah. Scottish is a hard language to just hear, even if your first language is...
Yeah.
Wait a second. Oh, no. Oh, shit. Is it happening again?
Oh,
Dick,
God.
You said that...
Sorry.
This can't...
I thought it was just on my end. I thought it was
Dick.
A car going past. There's nothing I can do about it. Any better?
It's a little bit better, but you really have to make sure to keep this whole thing out of.
I don't know what it is. I think
I
have to be close to.
Do you know how hard it is to edit?
I think I have to be close to a broadcast tower. I know there's one near Flatbush, but
okay, yeah. Do you keep, like, old-timey radios around? Like, I don't even know how they find
you. I don't.
All right, well, I guess then we didn't really do a whole lot with Enemies to Lovers. We did a lot with Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice is rivalry is courtship, and so is Dr. Master, and
So is Shakespeare. And also Frankenstein.
Have you considered Frankenstein?
But have you considered that perhaps maybe, and just going out on a limb here, Frankenstein. But this also happens in Anne of Green Gables. Anne. Oh, yes, it does. It's one of the first things that Gilbert Blythe does, like on their first interaction, their first day of school. Gilbert Blythe, one of the first things that he does is he's like, Anne Shirley, you've got red hair. And she's like, shut up. And he's like, I'm going to call you Carrots. And he starts writing Carrots on the board. And she comes up behind him and she cracks a slate over his head. And yeah, she's great. And they end up falling madly in love. It's such a wonderful love story.
Fun.
But it does start out with her being like, I will never speak to him again. We are sworn enemies and I hate him. And through most of the story, he's like, Anne, I just want to be friends. And she's just like, well, guess what? I hate you so much because you called me Carrots when I was a kid. I aspire to hold a grudge like Anne Shirley.
God.
I think that it's funny. I feel like Enemies to Lovers exists so clearly, especially in like heterosexual fiction, because it's kind of an excuse.
Straight people hate their wives.
Because straight people hate their spouses. They hate them so much, and it's such a fun little bit that they do when they can't stand each other.
It's just like a fun little like goof.
Such a fun little goof.
He's just pulling your pigtails.
Just pulling your pigtails. That won't form any unhealthy attachment habits. But like, because of all of the kind of suppression that goes on, one of the ways to subvert that is by being like, I hate you so much. And that gives them an excuse to talk to people.
Yes.
Hatred is not the opposite of love.
It is most certainly not.
If you truly hate something, you are showing a large amount of interest in it.
I would also like to point out that the reason this was submitted by Abigail Olshan is because she is my human girlfriend and we hated each other before we got together.
Yay! What was it? Who really sparked the rivalry?
I think she definitely hated me more. I did much more like hateable offenses. Literally the first thing I did, we did a study abroad program together and we had like a meeting at the beginning to like get, you know, information about the trip, and I was helping the professor bring in a pizza, and I opened up the box and the pizza hadn't been cut, so without thinking, I just like pulled a switchblade out of my backpack and started cutting up the pizza. And that was like the first thing she learned about me.
Good.
Was that I always have a knife. And then we hated each other because we were both super opinionated. And then we were like stuck together waiting in the lobby of this hotel after not sleeping for like 20 hours straight because we were roommates, and we were waiting, we were waiting for our room to get ready, and I'm like, yeah, I hate eating and sleeping. And Abigail's like, those are like literally my two favorite things to do. And I'm like, also, I've probably consumed more human blood than the average person. I don't remember how this came up. It wasn't just like, I didn't just say that. But she was like given this impression of me and then told like, all right, go upstairs and take a nap in the like a room with this person.
God, good.
And then
great.
We bonded over the trip and started dating like a year later. But
yeah.
It wasn't great. I did roll up real strong with the
real opinionated. You guys are both very intelligent people, so your ideas and hard opinions are well-founded, but
we're just also all dumb as hell about keeping shit to ourselves.
Yeah. But also, I mean, if somebody says, hey, I've consumed more blood than the average person,
you should kill that person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm working on it, so that'll happen
eventually. I know you are.
Yeah.
Big plans, everybody.
It's
coming. Buy your tickets now.
It'll be on a lake.
Who is this troupe?
Oh, I wonder. I wonder.
Okay, I would like to point out, though, that our business partnership has lasted this long because we fucking hate each other.
Yeah. It is.
Like, listen, you are absolutely one of my best friends and, like, one of my, like, inspirations to make things, but I also hate you more than life itself.
Yes, I agree. The thing is, this business and friendship is founded on mutually assured destruction.
Mm-hmm.
It will end with both of us just jumping off a cliff, for sure.
Hanagram style.
Exactly. And that's the only way that it will end. So
no children by the mountain goats playing in the background.
Exactly. So we will be locked in endless fisticuffs. But I think that this trope is you because you have a very strong affinity to, remember... I'm cutting that part out of the podcast. I'm gonna cut that out of the podcast.
We cannot name drop him.
We cannot name drop him. Yeah.
Redacted.
Redacted. We were just talking about normal ass things, but we did come to the conclusion.
Okay, but he was hot, though.
So anyway.
We were talking about regular things and not anything. Things.
Yeah.
Not anything about real people.
No, not anything about, because this isn't a show about real people. This is about tropes. Media goofs.
We've absolutely never talked about any real people.
No. We ourselves are not real people.
You can't prove we're real.
We are just sultry voices coming over your nice radio waves, wedging themselves into your teensy tiny little eardrum slots.
On a similar note, the next trope is called Children in Tow.
Children in Tow?
So, like, literally, think about the cover of Make Way for Ducklings.
Oh my god.
Where the mama duck is walking and the ducks follow behind her.
Oh my god. That's good.
That's the trope. It happens in The Sound of Music.
It happens in Peter Pan and the Lost
Boys. It happens in Madeline.
With Wendy, darling, of course.
Yes. And John. She's also up in the front.
Yeah.
So, okay, this actually happens twice in Peter Pan. One where when they fly, and then one where Peter and Wendy are, like, off having their own special mermaid time, and the Lost Boys and John and Michael were following the leader.
Yes.
Following the leader, wherever you may go. T-dum, t-d, a diddly dum t-day. I'm not gonna sing the rest of the song because it's racist.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like you also pick up little things often in video games, like in Pikmin, you have the little tiny, tiny plant people who follow you around.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the little guys who you run around?
You do,
You're
yeah.
Olimar or something, and you've got the little plant people, which, God, I'm jealous of him, but...
This happens in Spore.
Oh, yeah, you're right, it does.
And if you play Will Wright's hit video game Spore,
God.
When you, like... ambulate around, the rest of your species will, like, follow you.
God, yeah.
Me in any public setting.
Yeah, you do tend to attract children. Remember when we were at a house in the woods, an abandoned house in the woods, and, and we were just yelling at the house, and two little children on bikes came in and were like, hey, what are you doing? And we're just, like, yelling at a house, what does it look like? And I think that you might have collected them if their father didn't ride in.
Yeah, if their dad hadn't showed up, they would have hung out with us for probably the rest of the
day. Yeah, we would have gone exploring. We would have shown them, like, deer bones or something.
Yeah, and to be clear, we were not doing anything sus. We actually were standing and yelling at a house in the woods.
Yeah, no, for people who don't do suspicious things, we do a lot of odd things in public.
But totally legal.
Nothing legal.
Like, we rarely break the law together. Usually, yeah. like we'll be set up camp in the woods with, like, incense going and, like, knitting. And people will come upon us and be like, are you having a teen drug party? And we're like, no, we're literally knitting.
Like, people are like, oh, they're probably doing all sorts of drugs. And we're like, no, we're just boring people.
We're only doing the drug called friendship.
We're getting high off companionship. Mutual assured destruction.
And boy, are we getting high off our supply.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, good. Mm-mm. Validate my work.
Mm-mm, delicious. Let's compliment each other's art. Ooh, yes.
That's happened a couple of times at that exact house where we've been at the abandoned house in the woods and children have approached us.
Yeah.
And we had a nice conversation and then their parents roll up and are like sus.
Don't steal our kids.
Which, like, to be fair, yes. If your kids start talking to two adults in the woods, that's very
sus.
Yeah,
protect your kids.
But usually Annalie and I are there like, hoo-hoo-hoo, we're here to look at birds.
I know. Because the thing is, if I saw us in the woods, I wouldn't be like, uh-oh, these are two adults in the woods. I'd be like, uh-oh, two goblins are going to kidnap my child in, like, fairy realm.
I have clearly wandered into a fairy circle.
Yeah.
And these two, one of them speaks the truth and one of them speaks lies.
And you only get one question to find out. Our illegal activities include mild ghost hunting, stealing rocks from circles in the woods, and validating each other's writing while knitting.
Which is the worst offense.
Which is the worst offense of them all. The world is hard. That's the business.
The world is hard, but not as hard if you listen to Genre Blind every other Sunday. This will do it for our episode this week.
Real quick, ready? Okay, Bedwed Behead, Mother Goose.
Oh,
yes. The Mama Bear in Goldilocks.
Goldilocks.
And the little old lady who lived in a chute. Three fairy tale.
Oh,
like,
I thought you were gonna say who swallowed a fly.
Oh God, no, I'm not into vore.
No, let's do lived in a shoe. Lived in a shoe is better.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I've got a whole thing on a little old lady who swallowed a fly, and we'll cover that later.
The little old lady who lived in the shoe kind of always freaked me out a little bit,
yeah,
because of a recurring nightmare I had based on a commercial I saw on Nickelodeon as a child.
Good.
So I'm gonna kill her.
Great.
So here's the thing. I don't wanna fuck Mama Bear because her whole thing is like everything she likes is like real soft,
mm-hmm,
and I don't think I can fuck that.
Yeah.
But I like Mama Duck's determination. I think she would make a better wife, so I'm gonna marry Mama Duck and fuck Mama Bear.
Ooh, I like that. Mama Bear would treat you right, and Mother Goose would really just, you know, be a good life partner, I think.
Yeah, I think she would help me make financial decisions.
Yeah.
How about you? What's your MO?
I think I would wife up Mama Bear, because she's, like you said, very soft, but also she knows how to make, you know, at least a little bit of a good house. She knows how to make one third of a very good house. And
yeah. And she seems to be like a participant in the family.
Exactly. She also seems to be probably a feminist. And then I think the old lady who lived in a shoe who had so many children she didn't know what to do clearly fucks. So
She does clearly fuck.
So, you know, somebody knew what they were doing. So
is she Jack's mom?
She has so many children.
No,
that she just doesn't know what to do.
You know, like how Jack jumped over the candlestick and Jack and the beanstalk and all those Jacks are all the same Jack.
Yeah.
Is the little old lady who lived in the shoe his mom?
Again, probably. Diggs, she lost track. She pops them out like crazy. She's like, fucking, your name's Jack, and your name's Jack. Your name's also Jack. Your name's Jack. But I just can't stop fucking. Which is why I would have to kill Mother Goose.
Oh, interesting.
Sorry, Mama. Yeah, I know.
How would you kill Mother Goose?
I would... Diggs. I would throttle her.
Can you tell me intimately how you would destroy Mother Goose?
So let me tell you how I would kill Mother Goose. Actually, real quick, let's plug everything.
Hold
first.
On, I just want to real quick say something. There, I just Googled pictures of Mother Goose, and I came across an ad that says, on Saturday, July 27th at 10:30 a.m., Jan Sandwich is Mother Goose.
God.
I will send you the photo and we can put it on the Instagram when this episode comes out.
Please do. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Genre Blind. If you want to listen to us more, tune in every other week. We try and churn one of these out, much like the little old lady who lived in a shoe.
Churns out children. You can follow us at Genre Blind Podcast on Instagram, at Memento Mortsafe on Instagram or TikTok, and Annie D. Art. Annie DeTart on Instagram and TikTok. Ugh. You can also, what else can you do? You can email us at genreblindpodcast@gmail.com if you have trope suggestions or you want us to break up with someone for you. What else do we have going on? Also in our network is Between Stage and Screen, a podcast hosted by Abigail Olshan, who suggested one of our tropes. She has a couple episodes out now. I know there's going to be a Romeo and Juliet episode out soon that I will be on. So if you want to hear me get mad about Mercutio and talk about Baz Luhrmann a whole bunch, that's where to go.
I do want to hear that, genuinely.
Do you have anything else to plug?
Yeah, I want to plug, Centaur Stage. If you are down for the ins and outs, the ups and downs, a scientific inquiry into all things Centaur, you got to check out Centaur Stage. It is a bop and a blast. I cannot get enough of these hoof enthusiasts. So now I do want to go into intimate detail about how I would kill Mother Goose.
Would you use your hands, Will?
Of course I would use my hands. It would be an intimate process. So first I would...